At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Musical Ramblings, presented by Francis Butler.
Hello. We just listened to music by Michael Praetorius and Claudio Monteverdi and played by the Turkish ensemble called the Pera Ensemble. And it was a Maresca dance from L'Orfeo by Monteverdi and arranged and featured by the German composer Praetorius in his Terpsichore. A Maresca, which in Spanish, of course, you'd recognize as Morisca, a Maresca dance was very popular in Renaissance Europe. Moors and Christians using face blackener, bells and ribbons, and men dragged up to look like fools. It's where Morris dancing derives from. And Franco Zeffirelli used a Maresca dance in his 1968 film of Romeo and Juliet. Now, we are dealing with early Baroque or High Renaissance here. The German-born, Frankfurt-educated Michael Schulz chose to Latinize his name to Praetorius. They both mean magistrate, Schulz and Praetorius. And he never claimed to compose the tunes rather than arrange them, hence the Monteverdi credit. Praetorius would actually have considered himself an organist and a musicologist and Being a well-disciplined, devout Lutheran, he spent his life regretting that he had never taken holy orders. And for his penance, however, he established the format of Protestant hymns that so many people enjoy today. And if we survive it to Christmas, I will find you some very special Protestant carol music for private reflection before hitting the mulled wine and all the accompanying victuals. Indigestion solved by modern pharmacy rather than prayer and reflection, though. Now, back to where I was. The terpsichore takes us to the muse of dance. In Greek mythology, it literally means delight in dancing. And the name was given to Praetorius' compendium, published in 1612, of more than 300 dances in what was known as the French or Italian style, depending, of course, on one's cultural leanings. Not unlike the French complaint in 17th century Italy and the Italian complaint in France. And if you don't know what I'm referring to, let me say that Louis XIV's brother, the Duke d'Orléans, suffered, they said, from the Italian complaint, meaning that he preferred the company of gentlemen rather than the company of ladies. I say no more. And as I said, Praetorius delighted in the Italian and French dance styles. And Monteverdi, in particular, was the subject of his admiration. They were contemporaries of the same generation, but one from central Germany and the other from Cremona in Lombardy. And Monteverdi's Lamento della Ninfa from his eighth book of madrigals, the Madrigali Guerrieri et Amoroso, was dedicated to the Austrian Holy Roman Emperor Ferdinand III of Habsburg. A predictably ugly man too, with a giant bulbous nose, thrusting lower lip and jaw, punctuated with extraordinary facial hair arrangements. Not the sort of man one would relish encountering in a dark alley at night. However, the nymph's lament has little to do with the ambivalent countenance of the Holy Roman Emperor, of course, who, regardless, would have been considered the most eligible and attractive man in the known world, at least by those who benefited from his patronage. The god Phoebus had still to light the great fires of the dawn when the nymph left her dwelling. Her face, a pale temple in its ruins of grief, her cries, a heart rending. Hither and thither she went, stumbling through flowers, grieving the love she had lost. La Peggiata and Christina Pluha take up the tale. Amor.
Amor, amor, dove è la fede?
Lamento della Ninfa, played there by Christina Pluha and La Peggiata. Now, Vivaldi, too, hailed from northern Italy, though just outside the sphere of the Habsburg territories. He was in the Republic of Venice, and a century later. Well, as well as being an ordained priest, Il Prete Rosso, Vivaldi became the greatest writer and producer of operas in La Fenice Opera House. And at the height of his career, when he was in his late 30s and early 40s, he received a knighthood, a gold medallion, and an invitation to work in Vienna from the Holy Roman Emperor Charles VI himself. An invitation he didn't accept until he found himself suddenly going out of fashion. And within months of his arrival in Vienna, the emperor unexpectedly died of eating poisonous death cap mushrooms, at least according to Voltaire, and leaving his master of the horse and bedchamber groom of 19 years, his only heart, his comfort and soulmate, Count Michael Joseph Altan, desolate with grief. Vivaldi's Cello Concerto in A minor, here arranged for cello, piano, and four saxophones, as unconventional as the patron who never came to be, the Emperor Charles VI. We listen to the Alliage Quintet, the comprise of four saxophones, and pianist Alban Gerhardt to take over with their Allegro.
Thank you. TRE.
Talk Radio Europe.
Francis Butler on TRE.
Thank you.
Wow. Well, you'd be forgiven if you thought you'd been listening to Michael Nyman. Man on a Wire, Time Lapse, A Draftsman's Contract, one of those. But that was from a 2022 album, Be Baroque, from another quintet, Spark. Music by Graupner, arranged and played by the German cellist Victor Plumetaz. Now, Christopher Graupner was a contemporary of J.S. Bach and all the others, and also studied music in Hamburg with George Handel under Reinhard Kaiser, or Kaiser, I suppose. And it was only chance that he fell into obscurity. You see, he worked as composer for the Landgrave Ernst Ludwig of Hesse-Darmstadt, who was forever slow to pay, as well as falling into debt himself, which somehow led to the heirs and rulers of Hesse-Darmstadt refusing to release Graupner's works after his death. And the plus side, of course, is that all of his works have miraculously survived, because they were put in a box, and are slowly but surely coming to light. Here we have a charming duet that Graupner wrote, played by the Capricornus consort Basil with Peter Barksy and Franz Witzem. Charming duet by Graupner. It's impronounceable, the name of the song in German, so I'm not going to bother. Anyway, interestingly, at one point, Graupner auditioned for and procured the post of cantorate in Leipzig for a greater salary than he was being paid by Ernst Ludwig. Ernst Ludwig, terrified he would lose his court musician, paid up the arrears and increased his salary, at least for the time being, thereby persuading Graupner to remain with him, which interestingly allowed J.S. Bach to take the job on in Leipzig instead. And Graupner congratulated Johann Sebastian Bach and took it upon himself to write to the Leipzig City Council, "Bach is a strong musician. He is as strong on the organ as he is expert in church works and chapel pieces, and a man who will honestly and properly perform the functions entrusted him." Let us listen to J.S. Bach's Concerto for two harpsichords, strings, and continuo in C. Here's BWV 1061.
Thank you.
Bach's Concerto for two harpsichord strings and continuo in C. Now, a change of mood. Sometimes I fear I dwell too much upon the Baroque, which for me acts like a shot of caffeine to the system, a double espresso with a zest of lemon, and perhaps a small crunchy amaretto biscuit just for the hell of it. But after the espresso, a cognac, or a brandy Alexander, for example, to soothe the spirit. Maybe a Polish Wyborowa vodka, which would lead me to Chopin's famous third etude from his Opus 10, also called Tristesse, and by others, La Dieu. The 12 etudes of his Opus 10 were all composed between 1829 and 1832, when Chopin was still in his late teens and early 20s. Indeed, very similar in many ways to the piano music being composed by Mendelssohn during the same period. You see, originally, etudes were written as a form of exercise for pianists of all ages and standards. But for the first time, one finds Chopin writing etudes for the concert repertoire as well. And it was soon after hearing Chopin's first set of etudes that Franz Liszt revised his own etudes for concert playing, interestingly. And even today, we hear Chopin's etudes being used in popular music, television and cinema. And in this case, Romanian soprano Angela Gorgiou sings an arrangement for soprano, voice and piano by the late 19th century Russian-French soprano Celia Litvin. She died just before World War II. She knocked up this version of Chopin's third etude, called it Tristesse, and here Angela Gorgiou sings it, accompanied devotedly by Alexandra Dariescu.
Thank you. Radio Europe.
Your voice in Spain.
Musical Ramblings with Francis Butler.
Well, wasn't that absolutely splendid? And welcome back to the last part of today's programme. And what we just heard was an intermezzo. And it was not Richard Strauss, nor was it Mahler, nor was it Ferrari Wolf, but it was Franz Schmidt. an intermezzo from his opera Notre Dame, as exciting a work as one would expect, involving monks, gargoyles, bells, Paris mobs, and even a gypsy dancer, and of course Quasimodo, the famous hunchback. An Austro-Hungarian contemporary of Richard Strauss, Franz Schmidt was born in 1874, the same year as my grandfather. And his first full-time job was as a cellist with the Vienna State Opera before going on to become director of the Vienna Conservatory in 1925. His career suffered from a sad and turbulent private life. His wife was committed to a mental hospital. His daughter died in childbirth, causing him to have a nervous breakdown, which led to his resignation from his post as director and rector of the Conservatory. As Austria was annexed into the Third Reich, he was commissioned to write a German resurrection for the Nazi authorities. And although he never actually completed the work, preferring instead to find time to compose music for his one-handed pianist friend Paul Wittgenstein, he then died in 1939. But nonetheless, he was perhaps unfairly branded, posthumously, as a Nazi sympathiser after the war, although his defenders, of whom there were and are still many, claimed he had been a politically naive man and certainly never, never anti-Semitic. By the way, his wife was eventually murdered just to put salt on the wound, by the Nazi euthanasia programme in 1943. Now, let's go back a while. In 1795, Franz Joseph Haydn, on returning to Vienna after 2 long years in London, was presented a farewell present by one of his greatest admirers, a certain Mrs. Hunter. Anne Hunter, to be precise, widow of the famous surgeon John Hunter, who was the pioneer of smallpox vaccine, venereologist, a bone and tea specialist, and many other things. And just a quick note, he was the man, by the way, who stole the body of the Irish giant Charles Byrne, filling his coffin with rocks just before the body was tipped, or the empty coffin was tipped, into the sea. And his skeleton can still be seen today in the London Royal College of Surgeons. Anyhow, this present from the intrepid Mrs. Hunter was a poem, not the first he had received from her, called O Tuneful Voice. And the intensity of emotion to be found in the poem suggests that perhaps their friendship might have been something just a little more profound than the sharing of a pot of tea and a couple of arpeggios and a run of semi-quavers. Perhaps a basso continuo had developed, we shall never know. But the opening verse tells us much. O tuneful voice, I still deplore thy accents which I hear no more, still vibrate on my heart. In echo's cave I long to dwell, and still to hear that sad farewell, when we were forced to part. Obviously touched by the emotion so poetically expressed by Mrs. Hunter, Haydn surpassed himself in setting the words to a flowing tune and piano accompaniment, a piece that heralds the advent of the romantic German leader of the following century. Christopher Gent serenades us, accompanied by Julius Drake on the piano. O tuneful voice.
Oh,
Tune for voice, Christopher Gent singing there with Julius Drake on the piano, on a piece by Joseph Haydn and written by Mrs. Hunter. Well, time is up, I'm afraid, and today I'm going to leave you very regretfully, of course, with a rather quirky version of Jacques Brel's La Valse à Mille Tombes, The Waltz with a Thousand Beats, performed by the King Singers sometime back in the early 1990s, sounding not unlike a fairground generator. With that image in your minds, I will bid you au revoir, I think, not adieu, au revoir, until next time.
Tu souris déjà au premier temps de la valse. Je suis seul et je t'aperçois. Et Paris qui bat la mesure. Paris qui mesure notre émoi. Et Paris qui bat la mesure. Ne murmure, murmure tout bas. Une valse à toi tant, qui s'offre encore le temps, qui s'offre encore le temps de sembler dédié tout du côté de l'amour. Comme c'est charmant, une valse à quatre temps, c'est beaucoup moins dansant. C'est beaucoup moins de 100 000, tout aussi charmant qu'une valse à 3 temps, une valse à 4 temps, une valse à 20 temps. C'est beaucoup plus troublant, c'est beaucoup plus troublant, mais beaucoup plus charmant qu'une valse à 3 temps, une valse à 20 temps, une valse à 100 ans. Une valse à 100 ans, une valse à 100 ans, de chaque carrefour, on parle qu'à l'amour, le fléchit au bâton, une valse à mi-temps, une valse à mi-temps. Une valse à mi-temps, de patienter 20 ans pour que tu aies 20 ans et pour que j'aie 20 ans, une valse à mi-temps. Une valse à mi-temps,
Il y a des amis tant que ce nos amants dans son temps dans le bâti au roman.
Au deuxième chante la vache on est deux qui est dans mes bras. Au deuxième chante la vache nous comptons tous les deux une, deux, trois. Et Paris qui va là je me suis Paris qui je me suis notre et moi. Et Paris qui va là je me suis je redonne déjà.
Une valse à trois temps qui chante encore le temps, qui chante encore le temps de chanter j'ai des doutes quand j'ai l'amour, quand j'ai un monde qui passe à quatre temps. Si j'en cours moins d'encens, si j'en cours moins d'encens, mais tout si j'en manque, j'en passe à trois temps, une chasse à quatre temps, une chasse à trois temps. Si j'en cours tout blanc, si j'en cours tout blanc, mais tout si j'en manque, j'en passe à trois temps, une chasse à trois temps, une chasse à cent temps. Une chasse à cent temps, une chasse à cent temps, un chasse à quatre temps, un chasse à quatre temps, un chasse à quatre temps, une chasse à huit temps, une chasse à huit temps. Depuis j'avais 5 000 temps de chasse, j'ai compté pour chanter, j'ai pas tort, et j'ai bougé, j'ai pas j'avais 5 000 temps. Depuis j'avais 5 000 temps, depuis j'avais 5 000 temps, j'ai seul aux amants, j'ai senti le temps de chanter, j'en romans.
Oh, trois ciels, de la valse, de la sauce, enfin, tous les trois. Oh, trois ciels, de la valse, il y a toi, il y a l'amour, il y a moi, et Paris qui prend la mesure.
Si beaucoup moins de sang, si beaucoup moins de sang, mais tout ceci, j'en manque une vase à 20 ans, une vase à 20 ans, une vase à 20 ans. Si beaucoup plus grand, si beaucoup plus grand, mais tout ceci, j'en manque une vase à 20 ans, une vase à 20 ans, une vase à 100 ans. Une vase à 100 ans, une vase à 100 ans, à chaque cas de poudre, pas de cas d'amour, à chaque 20 ans, une vase à 1000 ans. Une vase à 1000 ans, une vase à 1000 ans, une vase à 20 ans, pour que tu aies le temps, pour que j'ai maintenant une vase à 1000 ans. Une vase à 1000 ans, une vase à 1000 ans, avec seul les amants, tout ceci, j'en ai le temps de passer le roman.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels, and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.